Hello, hello. This is Fernando Fiore, El Presidente, and you are listening to the Mouths of the South podcast on VerySouthSucker.com. Yole.
This is the Mouths of the South podcast. Matt Doyle joining us now on the Mouths of the South podcast.
And Alexi Lalas joins us right now,
bringing you the best coverage of Atlanta United FC. Paul Tenorio joining us now. Kristen Hennage on the Mouths of the South podcast.
The president of Atlanta United FC, Darren Eels.
Happy to have Doug Robertson on the Mouths of the South podcast, AJC writer for Atlanta United. The biggest names and exclusive interviews on the Mouths of the South podcast.
He'll do it again soon.
My pleasure.
Thanks, guys. Really appreciate you having me on.
Let's go.
What is up, Atlanta? This is the Mouths of the South podcast, brought to you by Dirty South Soccer. Eric Quintana joined by Josh Bagriansky. Thank you to our podcast sponsor, Frosted Vesuvio. And, of course, SB Nation is always on top of everything soccer-related and just on top of the whole sports world, if you will. Josh, how things going?
Everything is good, man. Life is good. Got a big one coming up Saturday. Can't wait.
Early impressions on like Montreal, just as a whole. You don't have to get into super big detail, but just early impressions.
Yeah, I mean, I think the story for them this season has been whether Nacho Piatti has been healthy or not. For them, I think he's the guy that pulls the strings in attack. And for a team, we kind of discussed this just before we went live. We expect them to kind of sit back and try to counterattack. That's the guy that pulls the strings if you're attacking in a direct manner. So it's going to be interesting to see how he handles it coming off of injury. We assume that he's going to play.
I have heard that he is going to be good to go for Saturday. He actually could have – I forget who they interviewed. I forget the exact name, so forgive me, soccer down here. He's the guy – the broadcast team for Montreal. I should have looked it up beforehand. But he was saying that that he could have probably gone against LA and they just wanted to give him an extra week off just to get fully prepared for Atlanta. And so it looks like he's going to play. And obviously that's a good thing for them, bad thing for Atlanta, but hopefully not a big enough deal to where we're looking at a loss. I think that this game is should be a win. I think the expectation is that you should get a win. I think you'll accept a draw, but knowing that they're going to get Piatti back, you know, after a couple weeks off, and, you know, we'll see how good of a form he's in coming off the injury. The whole team itself hasn't looked great. I think, three draws and two losses? Two draws and three losses? Oh, yeah. So it's a team that's struggling right now. It's a team that hopefully we can take advantage of early in the season. And then, you know, when we play him again, I believe in September, we'll see him again then. But it's important to get these points on the road. Important to get as many points as you can on the road. I actually didn't really think about this the other day. Well, math is my strong suit. So I went into these games against Seattle and Toronto thinking, oh, we got to get a draw out of these. We got to get a draw. It's at least a draw out of these. And I kind of forgot that if you lose one and win the other, you're already more points than two draws. But it's kind of the optics of going into Seattle and Toronto and picking up those draws against tough opponents. It's not so much about how they got the points or how many points they got, but it's how they looked getting that draw. And they looked good considering Joseph Martinez is out and, you know, you've had to kind of mix and match certain players with different positions and, you know, the chemistry at that point gets, you see hiccups in the chemistry and so hopefully they can go into Montreal having had two match weeks, at least at this point, with a new look to this team that's without Joseph. You're not going to have Yamil Assad in Montreal because of the red card against Toronto FC. But hopefully they continue to pull it out. Hopefully we see a shift in formation. Hopefully we see, at least from my perspective, I hope we see Kenwin. I hope we see Kenwin a little more than just 10 minutes in the other game.
And it is an interesting point that you bring up in terms of how the match went last week, how it's a draw has been acceptable. It does kind of feel like maybe you disagree here, but we're in kind of a grinded out mode right now with the injuries and going on this difficult road trip. It's definitely been a requirement to face some adversity to get results. And I don't really expect Saturday to be any different than that. But by the same token, I think you'd certainly expect after that first half against Toronto some lessons to be learned and to see a much better 45 minutes than what we saw in Toronto last week. Because, and we discussed it, avoided here, but that was the worst 45 minutes Atlanta all season.
Yeah.
So you expect to see some lessons learned coming into Montreal and start the game a little bit more focused and composed than we did last week.
We'll take your calls on anything Atlanta United. This is more or less going to be a preview of Montreal. But since we're live, since we decided to go live, or since you guys chose said that you wanted us to go live, we're going live. So 713-955-0722. If you want to get in on the broadcast, give us your thoughts on anything Atlanta United, how they've looked on this road trip so far, how you expect them to play, or what you hope to see out of their match against Montreal. Before we really dive into Montreal, though, let's talk about the training ground, because I was there at the official announcement ceremony on Tuesday, and it is spectacular. Josh, what do you think?
It is unbelievable. I mean, open air, it's world class, and it's yet another world class facet to the club that's being built. Yeah. And I heard Jason on the ATL Soccer Chat talking about the academy players getting to see it, the young academy players coming in and just saying they were completely in awe, and that's the type of image that you want to kind of portray when you're trying to build a club. And I think Atlanta United, every step of the way, for the most part, have achieved this, and I think it's an exciting club to play for now for a young player, for a longtime MLS guy, for a guy coming from overseas. It's just an attractive place to come and play, from the manager and the product on the field all the way down to the training ground and the atmosphere that's been created.
Yeah, my favorite part of that of the training ground is the open air gym. It's basically a massive garage door that just lifts up old school style, and it is the I haven't the CrossFit gym I go to has a small regular sized garage door that opens up, and I thought that was pretty cool. But when you have an entire wall that just opens up and allows you to literally walk outside from the gym, it is from the little workout area, it is fantastic. It is I'm jealous that I'm not a soccer player, that I'm not a professional soccer for Atlanta United, and I can only imagine what the academy guys go through as they walk through that the training ground, as they step on the field, as they got through their first couple practices on the training ground. I mean, that's got to be the biggest motivating factor, is being able to say that you grew up with this club and you're you've been given all of the advantages. It's the Atlanta United are like the rich parents that are giving their kids all the opportunities in the world to succeed.
Oh, sure.
Now whether these players take advantage of that opportunity is a different story. So we'll see. Hopefully what we see is, and this is part of the mindset of having the academy and the first team in the same training ground, is the ability to have the academy players, interact with the first team and see the first team and see guys like Gressel and Almiron and Villalba and the guys that scored on the weekend, all that good stuff. All that stuff is supposed to be a motivating fact for the academy team. And it's the best scenario I could possibly envision for an academy player that's not playing in Europe. I don't care where in the world you're an academy player. This is the best outside of Europe, in my opinion. And I haven't seen many, but from what I've heard, everyone says it's the best.
Time will tell, but it could be a good thing for the kind of in general in terms of the national team, now that we're seeing the academy system kind of becoming the primary method of player development. It's absolutely paramount that you have top facilities like this. Players can come in, get the idea of what it's like to live that lifestyle as a professional, around professional players. That's how talent is developed around the world. We've done it a little different in the U.S., and we'll avoid getting to the whole debate of college soccer, high school soccer versus academies and all that. But certainly, in terms of how the world does things, Atlanta United, I think, is following that culture by the idea of the product on the field. It's about grassroots. It's about the ground up, building a solid foundation. And one thing I think is going to be interesting is with the player restrictions in the MLS, you're probably going to inevitably miss on some designated players. You're not going to be able to hold on to the Almirons of the world forever. So it becomes very, very important that you are churning talented players out of your academy that you can bring right into the first team and can make an impact when needed. Because you're not always just because of the way with the roster restrictions and the rules in MLS, you're not always going to have that top roster in terms of who you're acquiring and who you're able to hold on to. So again, very, very important that these players coming up are able to contribute right away. And if you put them in a professional atmosphere, that usually is what happens.
Well, speaking of professional atmosphere, I know that some of the Atlanta United Academy guys are invited, I think, either on a weekly basis or maybe a daily basis, depending on the training schedule, to be a part of the training with the first team. If the team feels the certain players have warranted a chance to practice with the team, that's what they get to do. And that's huge. That is, I don't know if every club does that, but that is important, an important part of developing young players, getting them at least training minutes with professional first team guys, just to get a sense of how to really treat practice, how to treat training, how to treat the recovery, how to, you know, and just the mindset and the mentality of going through a daily rigors of training with the first team on the senior squad. And just that experience is something I don't think many academy players get. And it's so valuable, especially if you're looking to develop young talent and bring them up through the ranks and turn them into the next MLS or whatever, you know, fingers crossed, European stars. But it all starts with the training facilities, and it's just absolutely amazing. They've got, I think I was hearing Michael Parker say that there's a cold and hot tub, in ground hot tubs and cold tubs, I guess. Every player after practice went and got treatment and got massaged or got whatever ailments they had everything right there. They've got the locker room that's the whole circular and promoting unity. The kitchen upstairs is awesome. They got a full service kitchen, which I thought was pretty cool.
No, you got up there.
The food is almost too fancy. At least the food that was at the training ground. On Tuesday, they had these. What were they? They were chicken salad. Imagine like a tiny, tiny ice cream cone with ice cream on top. Except on top, it's chicken salad, and then the cone is obviously the cone. I don't know what it was made of. I didn't try it because I'm not a big fan of chicken salad, but. That was
small.
There. They had a bunch of a lot of deli meats and some other stuff. It was too fancy for a guy like me. Too much. Dial it down, Atlanta United. 713-955-0722. But yeah, the training academy is something obviously that happened this week. A lot of notoriety. One of the things that I really like is how much natural light gets into that building.
It's great.
It's an entire. Imagine just an entire wall of windows, and that's all it really is, because there's not a lot of places inside the building you can't directly look out and see the field, which is awesome, because that's how my high school was. My high school at Pinecrest Academy was the same way. They wanted a lot of natural light, and basically both high school buildings are they're brick buildings, but they have a ridiculous amount of windows that just allow a ton of natural light in to the point where you don't even need you don't even need to turn on the lights during the day. It's that bright inside. But yeah, I mean, the training academy as a whole, the training facility as a whole is fantastic.
And it's not just for show. I mean, this stuff makes a difference with the product you put out on the field. There's not a world-class club in the world that doesn't have this stuff covered. And it's not just for looks. It makes a big difference. If you put, it's been proven time and time again, if you put players in this type of environment, in a professional environment, that's going to translate to when they go on. So again, it's just great to see a United role model on this.
That it is. Hopefully other MLS teams start taking notes and start implementing the same sort of things that Atlanta United is doing, at least with that mindset at the forefront, so that we can continue to see MLS develop as a league of choice for not only the aging players in Europe, but also the young guys coming out of South America, like we've seen with Atlanta United do, picking out some of the top prospects from Argentina, from Paraguay, or from wherever in South America. And
I guarantee you, when they went and talked to Almiro and they said, look, we're going to have a world-class training facility for you, I guarantee you that was part of the pitch, and I guarantee you that he wouldn't have come otherwise, because a player like that, or a Joseph Martinez, who's trying to be recognized on the world stage, wants to be in that environment. And I guarantee you that plays a huge role in getting those guys here in the first place.
No question. In about 5 minutes, or so, we'll have an interview. Sam Franco did an interview with Kevin Egan, of course, one of the Atlanta United broadcast guys that'll be broadcasting against for Fox Sports South or Southeast. He's one of the guys that's been with the Chicago Fire from 2011 He was with the Chicago Fire from 2009 to 2011 as a commentator before joining BN Sport. He's going to be joining the podcast. It's a recorded podcast, so you'll get that bit. It was done yesterday, so not out of date or anything like that. But Sam Franco with his contributions that way. But let's continue talking about the training ground. And one of the things Villalba said was that it doesn't compare to anything he's seen in Argentina, and that you just mentioned it before, that being a selling point. I think a lot of the players that the former teammates from Villalba, the former teammates from Almirón, of Assad, you know, the guys from Vélez, from Lanús, and San Lorenzo, and they're going to take notice of what's going on in Atlanta because their former players are here. On top of that, you're going to have those clubs and players talking to each other about the guys that came to MLS and whatnot, because those were some of the top prospects we picked out of the Argentine Premier League. So they're naturally going to talk, and that's obviously going to hopefully open some more doors for later prospects down the road. And this training ground is going to be a huge selling point. You add Mercedes-Benz Stadium, fingers crossed, whenever the hell that gets done, and those are going to be big selling points. Even though it's not a soccer specific stadium, even though it's going to be on turf, it's still going to be a huge selling point for those players, those prospects that we want to bring into Atlanta United in the future.
I mean, aren't you just glad that they're going about it like the right way,
yeah,
building the club? Because you see a lot of clubs in MLS build, and they try to do their own thing. And like, I mean, I guess I'm kind of a soccer elitist, you know, having watched it. But there are some clubs in the MLS you can sense that they're not a part of the world footballing culture in the way that the club is built. And it's a complete antithesis of that with this.
It seems as though their mind is completely closed off to anything else that's going on outside of MLS. So, you know, when it comes to building training grounds or stadium situations, their mind is completely closed off to the fact that there are such things as soccer specific stadiums, or there are such things as, you know, world class training grounds, stuff like that. And it's not just a building with a bunch of soccer fields around it. That's not really how it works around the world. But guys, you know, owners, and I'm going to pick on New England, but owners like like the Crafts in New England with the New England Revolution, you know, it's not that he definitely he has the money. I mean, he just won a Super Bowl with the Patriots. That alone gives you enough money to possibly do some things if you want. But it just seems like he doesn't want to improve his club. He doesn't want to, you know, bring that world class description, I guess, to the New England Revolution. And that is going to cost you when it comes to bringing in players from overseas, from down south, whatever the case may be. Atlanta United isn't going about it that way. And like you said, they're going about it the right way. They're doing things that honestly, I didn't expect them to do. I knew Arthur Blank had money. I knew Arthur Blank had the best of intentions in mind when he brought soccer to Atlanta, when he brought MLS to Atlanta. But at the same time, we didn't know exactly what we were going to get when he did bring this team to Atlanta. Now we know that his intentions are as solid as they can be. It's not just that he has good intentions, but he wants to invest the time, the money, the energy in making this club a world-class club. He wants to put himself, not only the Atlanta Falcons, but he wants to put himself on the world stage in a soccer sense. And this is a great first step. It's funny to think what the negatives of Atlanta United have been so far. And outside of Mercedes-Benz not being finished on time, I can't think of any other. I mean, that Mercedes-Benz caused
soccer error.
Yeah, you know, exactly.
That's a separate, yeah. Everything they've done in terms of building a world-class soccer club, I think 10 out of 10 thus far.
Yeah, and hopefully they can continue. I'm curious to see what big, like what the first big blunder is from Atlanta United is going to be in the future, because they're gonna make a mistake or something's gonna happen somewhere that gets the. I think the Mercedes-Benz Stadium situation had ripple effects in terms of the season ticket holders and how that was going to be handled at Bobby Dodd, and you know there's still people that don't like the fact that games are being played at Bobby Dodd and they're having to stand on 90 minutes. By the way, if you haven't heard about the whole. If you haven't, I agree with you, but if you haven't heard about how the national media has reacted to Atlanta United fans standing the entire 90 minutes, you don't see that anywhere else, and they're taking notice. So I know that some people don't like that, the standing for 90 minutes, especially maybe the younger people, the young kids, the elderly, if you will. But people across the United States are taking notice of what exactly Atlanta is happening with Atlanta, and it's. It's a credit to a lot of what this front office has done so far.
Yeah, soccer is different than a lot of the sports that we're used to, you know, in terms of people who've grown up with the Braves or the Hawks or the Falcons. And so obviously we want to create our own culture, but let's embrace some of the world culture too. And part of that involves a really intense crowd that's into the game. And for the most part, people have had a great time at these matches, regardless of people standing up. You know, I get it. But it seems like that's just the way it's going to go for the time being.
We'll jump to Kevin Egan in just a second. But I forgot about this aspect of the training ground. The second favorite thing, one of the most kind of annoying things about working out is having that post or pregame, protein shake. At the training ground, they have that stuff already mixed and ready to go. So all you have to do, it's like a Gatorade. You just reach into the cooler, pull it out, and you're good to go.
Hey, that
they
stuff
have that
matters.
At the ready.
Big time.
I mean, that is if a gym sold me that as part of the feed to get me to go to their gym every day or whatever, that would be a huge selling point. I'm almost upset that it's not a bigger workout facility and that they aren't taking they aren't getting people to sign up to register to be able to work out of that facility, because it's such a nice facility. And again, so jealous of what Atlanta United players get to partake in.
Yeah, it's beautiful. I wouldn't mind getting a lift in there someday. Maybe we can sneak in there someday. And you know, what if we just wear some Atlanta United gear and get a lift in? Would they notice?
Yeah, I'm going to say that they would.
Maybe you shouldn't have said that on air. Cover blown. But, okay.
Maybe during the off season they'll let us get in there and try.
But seriously,
out
it's beautiful, man. Yeah, so jealous. I mean, so jealous. I mean, the kids. I'm mainly jealous of the kids that get in there and see that, having grown up playing in a different time where, you know, we're playing on really really bad fields, sharing stadiums with 8-9 teams, and now you get to see and that's the top players, and now you get to see the top players enjoying this. So a little bit jealous, but obviously it's going to be great for the club and great for the game.
I think the cool thing that we'll hopefully get to look forward to in the future is we're all fans now, and we're all past the point of trying to play professional soccer for one, or trying to join the academy programs and whatnot. But at some point, the young kids that we know that either are our children or the children of friends or whatever, they're going to start to get to a point relatively soon where we're going to start seeing friends of super fans. No, kids of the super fans make it into these academy, and hopefully we get one or two that whose parents were one of the founding members or whatever, and now are playing for Atlanta United sometime down the road in the future. That's going to be one of the great stories whenever that happens, and that's bound to happen at some point, because there's a lot of soccer talent in Atlanta, in the Georgia, in the metro Atlanta area, in Georgia, in the Southeast. And so hopefully we get a chance to see that happen. That's going to be one of the stories. It's going to be a lot like Andrew Carlton. It's going to be one of our own that was built through the ranks, and now we're going to hopefully watch him. Well, one day we hopefully watch him score goals for Atlanta United.
Exactly. And to me, that's really the point of the academy system, is to create that link to the community in terms of younger players. And inevitably, as you mentioned, you'll see someone of a son of a season ticket holder, or maybe a player retires here or comes back to Atlanta, stays here, and his son plays, you know, and you know, maybe 10 years from now we have a bunch of young Almirones running around through the academy, you know. So it's all about community and building something from the ground up. And Atlanta United is embracing that in a way that some clubs have in the U.S. and others haven't.
All right, let's jump into the Kevin Egan interview. Again, Sam Franco hosting that, doing that interview for us for the Mountain South podcast. Again, he is one of the members of the broadcast crew that Atlanta United has brought in to cover the team during match days on Fox Sports South. So without any further ado, Kevin Egan on the Mounds of the South podcast.
Joined now on the Mounds of the South podcast by Kevin Egan. Kevin is the current play-by-play man for Atlanta United on the TV side. He will be relieved in a few games by Alan Green, who will be taking over once he gets done with his duties over in Europe. But Kevin will be calling the next four matches on the Fox Regional Networks for Atlanta United. Kevin, thank you so much for giving us a little time today.
My pleasure, Sam. It's like someone's given me a little puppy, and I love the puppy, and I won't want to let it go after five games. But it's going to be the case when we'll pass the baton on to Alan Green, who I'm sure will be absolutely brilliant, and the fans will love him. But it's been such an honor so far to be involved.
Yeah, first and foremost, I wanted to, you know, you've been working with BN Sports for a while. You host the Extra weeknights at 7 p.m., and you guys kind of just hit soccer in general from all different angles there. But how did you get involved with Atlanta United?
It came about, what was it, a couple of months ago now, I think, or there about 6 weeks ago. First of all, Darren Eales and Carlos Bocanegra had been in before, and I had met them before and just chatted, and they were on the Extra actually not so long ago. As guests, so they. I got a phone call off a representative that reached out and said, "Would you be interested in speaking to Atlanta? They're going to need someone for a few games." And I miss MLS. You know, I do miss MLS. I was with the Chicago Fire for 3.5 seasons in Chicago, and it's just the smell of the grass, the stadium, being at the games, everything about it. You miss that when you're in a studio, and I love my studio job, and I wouldn't swap it. But there's something special about being at the live games that I absolutely missed. And I love Major League Soccer and the growth that we've seen within the league over the past, well, 5-6 years, really. We've seen massive growth within this league, maybe even the past 2-3 years as well. So it's been so exciting. And Atlanta United, the chance to get involved with Atlanta was just, well, that was a no-brainer because of the excitement and the quality that the club has put forth so far.
When you first got involved with Atlanta United and you first thought that this would be a possibility, you getting this job and you started studying the team and doing your homework and things like that, what were your initial impressions on what you saw?
Even before that, just really impressed with everything. When Carlos and Darren came in to speak to me on the Extra that time at BN Sports, blown away by the buzz. When you meet someone and they shake your hand with a big smile and they can't wait to tell you about the project that they're part of, that's infectious. And that's exactly what happened with Darren and Carlos. And I really liked both those gentlemen. So to speak with them initially, then to watch the games and to sit with the feet up and watch the first four games at home, just loved it. Loved the buzz at Bobby Dodd, loved the commitment to play a certain style. And that's something that's a breath of fresh air that I have never seen before. I thought long and hard about this, about teams in MLS that have had a commitment to playing a certain way over and over, and their style was so identifiable. And I think the Jason Crisis RSL team of a few years ago, when they reached MLS Cup and lost on penalties to Sporting Kansas City, that had a very easy style to see. You know, they had the diamond in midfield with Beckerman at the base and Javier Morales at the tip, and they were just so impressive the way they'd function as a machine. And now Atlanta United have this identity about them. They've got these young players that are grabbing all the headlines, and rightly so. I heard someone speak from Argentina recently about how Lanús are reeling from the loss of Miguel Almirón. And you can understand why, because at 22, he's just so impressive. And his smile is so infectious, by the way. He never stops smiling. And even throughout the whole team, the way the roster was built, and I think I said it during the broadcast on Saturday, and I'll say it again, a simple thing like hiring a goalkeeping coach like Aaron Hyde, who can then bring in two goalkeepers, knowing that Guzan won't be around until June, two goalkeepers that he knows and has worked with and likes in Kyle Rainish and obviously Alec Kahn as well, a Decatur native. So throughout the whole process, it's been just one of those ones where I've sat back and said, this is just, it's just right. They're doing it right in every single way.
Yeah, and we talk a lot about this kind of MLS 3.0 that people are saying that Atlanta United have started here with the way that they've signed designated players and not going after the retirement community, so to speak, but going after young players that are just hitting their primes. And we've seen the success they've had early on with Almiron, who looks like one of the best players in the league early on in this season, Joseph Martinez with the goals that he was scoring early, Tito Villalba, who seemed like he was taking a little longer to get into things but had a great game this past weekend against Toronto, and Yamil Assad, another guy who was kind of cast off at Velez and has had a great run here with Atlanta United to start the season. So in the way that they've built their team, how impressed have you been just in the fact that they were kind of able to do that and still work within the confines of the MLS system?
Yeah, very much so. And they were, I think, close to signing Romero as well from South America. All throughout, even take into consideration a guy like Perez. You know, we went back and forth, myself and Dan Duggan, and we were saying, we call him Leandro González Perez, and I said, I'm going to fall all over myself if I have to say Leandro González Perez all night. So we were saying Perez by the end of it. But González Perez, he has been remarkable. And I love that Argentine mentality, that warrior. You see it in whether it be Javier Mascherano or players gone by in the past like Batistuta. They're just warriors when they come from that country. And that's what he is. And next to him, you've got the perfect complement because you've got the ball-playing warrior in González Perez, and you've got Michael Parkhurst, who's constantly communicating in front, Jeff Laurentiis, who's played centre-back with Chicago for two full seasons. So you've got him able to drop deep when tactically Tata wants to attack. You have Jeff take it from the goalkeeper, centre-backs go wide, full-backs go all the way further forward, Garza and Tyrone Mears, and you've got your perfect system to play it out of the back. And I think it's a joy to see, and the recruitment is so impressive. I said on Twitter recently, I don't know how Chicago ever let Jovan Jones go, and I don't know how Seattle ever let Tyrone Mears go, because they're two of the most impressive fullbacks in the league, and Mears has slotted in seamlessly, you know, and as has Greg Garza, who, if you watched the first goal back from Saturday, the role of Greg Garza in that first Villalba goal was so impressive, because a quick 1-2 with Yamil Assad, and the first time, nearly no-look pass into Miguel Almiron, who was between the lines, who had just evaded Michael Bradley. That pass was absolutely perfect. And then, obviously, Almiron's pass was perfect for Villalba. So, all across the board, I hope that Tata Martino can somehow keep these players fit, because we're already seeing now Joseph Martinez is out along with Yamil Assad. Going into the game, five games in, we were able to say at the weekend that eight players had started all five games. That is a phenomenal number to have started all five games. So, it's not going to be the same this weekend. Obviously, Yamil Assad will be out. But if you can keep that back five in particular fit, Alec Khan and the four ahead of him, it's going to be tough to break this team down.
And you mentioned Tata Martino there. Obviously, Atlanta United doesn't pull in some of these players without him. Just, is he, or could he end up being one of the biggest, if not the biggest, managerial signings in MLS history?
I've always wondered, to be honest with you, Sam, why more MLS teams don't go after bigger name coaches, because it's not as if there's a salary cap and you're restricted by what you can do. And maybe it's simply owners trying to save money, something, you know, that Mr. Arthur Blank clearly hasn't taken notice of. And he's gone out and he's brought in a massive coach across the world stage like Tata Martino, who was a kick of a ball away from winning the La Liga title against Atleti just a few years ago, and who, as we know, was a kick of a ball away from winning the World Cup. If Gonzalo Higuain decided to show up in that final, Tata Martino would be a World Cup winning manager. And maybe that's been a little bit harsh on Higuain, but it's just one of those ones that he's been so close, and he's had such huge success, whether it be with Paraguay or Newell's Old Boys as well. He's someone who is very impressive, and he's a really nice guy as well. I'm not sure if you've had the pleasure of meeting him yet. An absolute gentleman that's come in and taken to Major League Soccer and respects the league, respects the culture in Atlanta. Everything about what he's done so far has not been a big-time Charlie move. He hasn't come in with an ego. And I think that's been also another refreshing element to this. And I've touched on it already. The commitment to play a certain way has to be applauded.
You know, a player that Atlanta United brought in before Tata Martino was brought on board is Kenwin Jones. And obviously, with the injury to Joseph Martinez, a lot of fans seem to think that Kenwin would just slot right in there, but he hasn't started any of these games. He's come in and played well. I thought particularly at the end against Seattle, he played very well, and even at times there against Toronto, but he has not started. Do you think that is more of a thing where he just doesn't fit the system that Tata Martino wants to employ, and that he might be a player that Tata views as a guy that can come on late and maybe help save a game?
Might be, because, yeah, you're right to point out he was brought in before Tata Martino. However, he had a huge role to play at the weekend. Both Dan Gargan and I, after leaving, were saying, wow, that was a masterstroke, because what Tata did was go five or six at the back toward the end,
mm-hmm.
Two playing in front, and then Kenwin Jones was doing everything in his power to hold the ball up and bring his teammates into play. And I don't know if that's going to be a role that he's going to go with from the start soon. It would certainly shift this weekend. If he did do that, it would shift Villalba to one side, maybe even Almiron to another, and you could play with three in midfield and go 4-3-3 with Kenwin Jones as your main target man. There are other options this weekend. I know everyone can't wait to see the first few minutes of Andrew Carlton. Still waiting to see when that might happen, but you could go with a more robust midfield and bring in Chris McCann. Harrison Heath came on. He's an option as well. So there are options, and this is when your depth gets really tested. This is another tough game, but I seriously think this is a game that Atlanta United can go win, because Montreal are reeling right now. They've got some big injury problems. Kamara at the back is not as certain. He got hit in the head and due to protocol and things like that. I'm not sure if he'll start this game. Obviously, you had Donadel sent off for an elbow. Sent off for something similar to Yamil Assad, and they've appealed that, and word hasn't come through yet whether he can play. He'd be a big loss in their side, and obviously Piatti is a concern as well. So this is a game that Atlanta can go and win, but you need to nail their tactics.
It's funny, talking about injuries and things like that, one thing that Atlanta United are going to have to deal with this weekend is Yamil Assad being out due to the red card, and just kind of looking at that play in particular, it seemed incredibly harsh to give him a red card for that. There didn't seem to be any intent at all. I know the letter of the law says you can't have your arms or your elbows up that high, but to give him a red card for that just seemed really harsh.
Yeah, I'll ask you, if it was an opposing player, though, how would you have felt? Because it's something I try to remove myself from the Atlanta side and watch it back. He looked like he was naturally... He didn't, to me, look like he intended to do it at all. At all. Let me state that first and foremost. He looked like he was trying to get around the player. Now, if you're trying to get around someone that's putting their body in the way, naturally, you move your arms, and that's going to happen. Your arms are not going to stay down as low as possible. So I don't think he meant to connect in any way with Zavaleta, but it seemed like he did. And if you do connect with your elbow in any way to someone's head... You mentioned it, the letter of the law, and it's a red card. And it's one of those ones that the South American players will need to, get used to Major League Soccer officiating pretty fast. We saw Carmona in the first week just with a slight little touch of the cleats on a New York Red Bull player and sent off. And it's one of those ones that they'll need to get used to it and understand that is going to be a red card in Major League Soccer every single day. Donadel wasn't happy when he was sent off, believe me, when Jermaine Jones went flying to the ground as well over the weekend against LA Galaxy. It looks like he'll miss the game for a very similar offence in many ways. But it's Major League Soccer. It's the league. And if it is to the letter of the law, a lot of the time in Major League Soccer, the referee will follow the rule book. And what annoyed me most, though, was the fact that it was played on the big screen inside BMO Field, and I couldn't believe it when I was there, and Dan was the same way next to me, that if that happened anywhere else in the world where you have teams within close proximity, let's say you had a rivalry in Argentina where a lot of these players have come from, and you could have a rivalry within the same city and you have a stadium packed with 60% one team, 40% the other, whatever it is, and you do something like that, that's going to incite violence and incite a problem within the stadium. And that's something that happened over the weekend. That should never happen because, and honestly, my opinion, Sam, after that was simple, that the referees were negotiable. As soon as that happened, Jozy Altidore had a big smile on his face, Michael Bradley, they rushed towards the officials, they started to manipulate the situation as quickly as they could, and sure enough, Yamil Assad was sent off. The referee had already talked to Yamil Assad. He had had a chat with him and was ready to move on from that incident. And then somebody upstairs decided to play it on the big screen, and that had a huge impact. And that should not happen. That really shouldn't happen in sport as a whole, especially when it's a controversial situation like that. You should have enough trust with the officials that they'll do their job properly, without relying on a big screen like that to influence things. I didn't think that was fair.
Atlanta United still have two more games on this four-game road swing before heading back home to Bobby Dodd to take on DC United on April 30th. They've gotten 1 point from each of these last two games. If best-case scenario happens and they get 6 points out of the next two and they end that four-game road trip with 8 points, that really signals that this team is probably a lot better than a lot of people thought they would be up to this point, and will definitely make a push for the playoffs, right?
Oh, without a doubt. I still think no matter what happens in the next two games, I think the team is good enough to make a push for the playoffs. It's something that we haven't seen since, in certainly modern-day MLS, Seattle were the only team to do it in their first year. You have to go all the way back. I think the Chicago Fire, you know, they did it and they won it in the first year back a couple of decades ago now at this point, nearly. So it's something that they'll do anyway, regardless of these two games. But if they can get away without losing in these two games, it has to be simple. You win your home games, you get a result, you draw on the road. And if you do that, you make the playoffs comfortably. So if Atlanta can go to Montreal, impose the Tata Martino style like we've seen so far, I'm confident that the team will get a very positive result. Montreal have some weapons, though. They're a good side, and they're a side that, if you get into a foot race with Montreal, you could be in trouble, because they've got, obviously, Dominic Oduro has been a player in Major League Soccer for a long time that everybody knows an awful lot about his pace and his ability to get in behind. And then they've also got other players as well that I think have been impressive so far this season. A very good young player by the name of Balu Tabla. Keep an eye on him. He's only 18 years of age. He's been linked with teams over in Europe. He's born in Ivory Coast, but a Canadian U20 internationally. Someone who I think not many people know a whole lot about, but he's quick, he's tricky, and he's someone that could be a bit of trouble for Atlanta. So he plays in the left-hand side of their, maybe a 4-3-3, I would imagine they'll play this weekend. So Tyrone Mears might have his hands full.
Before we let you go here, Ray Hudson is a guy that you're working close quarters with at BN Sport, and obviously one of the more over-the-top announcers. A lot of people love his style. Some of the goal calls he's had for guys like Ronaldo and Messi are legendary. Is he really like that, even like off-camera or off-mic?
Sam, he is exactly like that off-mic. Exactly like it. The other day, there was pizza brought in for everybody. He burst into the green room. Ah! Who brought the pizza? Ah! Is there pepperoni? And we said, yeah, Ray, there's pepperoni. Ah! I didn't think this day could get any better. And he is like that no matter what situation you are in. He is he's infectious about life. And he, you know, Ray Hudson divides opinions. There's no question about that. But there's one thing for sure, and I can honestly say this from the bottom of my heart, he is such a gentleman. He is one of the nicest human beings you could possibly meet, and he cares about absolutely everybody he comes into contact with. And he's a joy to have as a colleague, to be honest with you, as are most of my colleagues at BN Sport. They're just delightful people, but he's up there. I mean, everybody loves Ray, and it's as simple as that. It's like everybody loves Raymond. I just thought about it. I must say that to him, by the way.
Absolutely.
He's one of those guys that he's a joy to be around.
Well, my podcast co-host kind of put my foot to the fire here and said that now that we're talking to you, that we'll have to pull some backdoor strings and hopefully can utilize that to get Ray Hudson on with us at some point somehow.
Without a doubt, we'll get Ray on, no problem.
Excellent. If you'll do that for us, then that'll definitely be awesome. Not that I wanted to do that business in public on the podcast right here or anything, but, you know, sometimes you got to strike while the iron's hot. Okay, before we let you go, when we've had people connected with Atlanta United on before, we ask them two questions, and it's about a personal preference on something. And you being from Ireland, your answer might be kind of similar to what Darren Eales, who's from England, obviously, had an answer about this question. But sweet iced tea, what are your thoughts on sweet iced tea?
Right. How do I talk about this without offending you?
No, you're not offending anybody. No, it's a totally open discussion.
It's not my cup of tea. Excuse the pun. I would usually go for like a hot cup of tea, but since I've been down in Miami as well, my wife has gone for all sorts of crazy herbal teas. The stuff I've been trying lately is absolutely out of this world. So I'm willing to try anything when it comes to tea. So when I'm in Atlanta, Georgia, I would love to meet up with you guys, have a sweet cup of tea, or sweet iced tea even at that, before the game against Houston on the 20th of May.
Okay, I'll say this. I will get my grandmother, who is about as classic Southern as you can get, I will get her to brew some tea for us, and I will bring it to you.
Amazing.
For that game in Houston, or against Houston in Atlanta. I will do that for you.
Amazing. And I will bake your grandmother a shepherd's pie.
She would love that. I think she even makes one of her own. We haven't had it in a while, but she is also, her family's from England, so we have a lot of that stuff in the coffers. But last but not least, grits. Do you have thoughts on grits?
Love grits.
All right.
Give me grits all day, every day. I had a favorite breakfast place in Chicago called Wishbone, and I used to go there, and they'd say, grits, what do you want, grits, potatoes, toast? Grits, please. Grits all day. So, I'll definitely be up for trying out the sweet iced tea for sure, some authentic Southern sweet iced tea, and I will have the grits all day, every day. And by the way, I look forward to joining everybody for a pint in Fado. In Buckhead, I'd love to join. The scenes looked absolutely amazing from the game against Toronto. So that would be a real pleasure to get there one day and have a beer with everyone.
Yeah, we've done our show from there the last two games, and we tried to get over there on away games, and it really is an awesome environment. So I'm sure that Terminus Legion, Footy Mob, everybody looks forward to Kevin Egan coming into town and sharing in a pint or two and see where it goes from there. Kevin, thank you so much. This has been great. We look forward to talking to you again very soon, and thanks for being so generous with us.
And I'll sing the first song, by the way, and then what we'll do is we'll play a thing where I pass it on to someone else. So I'm going to sing the first song, Sam, and then you have to sing the second song, all right?
All right.
And we go to Bado. That's the rule.
That sounds good, Kevin. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Sam. Thanks for having me on. Appreciate it.
Great stuff from Sam Franco. You know him from the Mavs podcast here with us. He's not here today, but he recorded that for us, sent it down the line, and we played it for him. We played it for you guys. But thanks.
That guy knows
his
stuff, man.
Yeah. Thanks to Kevin Egan. That was a great interview. That's fantastic stuff. Great job by Sam Franco. Great sport in Kevin Egan. No one from outside the United States, no one outside from the South likes sweet tea. I don't like sweet tea. You like sweet tea?
I actually don't like sweet tea either, but I get a mouthful for it. I don't get it. I mean, it just to me, it's like a water with a hint of lemon and sugar. I'm not into it.
It's like if you were to drink coffee cold. And I know there's iced coffee, but that in itself just sounds gross. You know, like when did that start becoming a thing? I don't know.
Oh man, since ever since I can remember. I mean, yeah. I think Sam's a fan. Maybe Jason is, but. It's never been for me. I hope the listeners aren't too disappointed with us.
Yeah, I tried. I just can't do it. I did get on the grits train. I was a avid what is it? What's the anti-advocate? I hated grits for the longest time. I was not a fan. And
you were anti-grit? Oh man.
I was anti-grit, but I recently, very recently, like less than a year ago, had I forget where I had it, and I just said, you know what? F it, I'm going to try it. I haven't really given grits a solid chance. And I tried it, and I loved it.
There are good grits and bad grits. So, if you get a bad thing of grits, it's pretty bad. But good grits with the right food, throw some butter in there.
I'm disappointed in how long it's taken me to like grits. 27 years of my life, I didn't like grits. I try it, soon after my 27th birthday, and, of course, I fall in love with grits. Let's jump on the phones. 404. You're on the Mavs.com podcast live here on Dirty South Soccer. What's up? 404. You're on the air. Not anymore. So let's jump into talking about Montreal and Atlanta United coming up Saturday, 1 o'clock. We will try to be up for dough. We can't promise because we have, there's a lot of scheduling conflicts that's starting to arise. For me, I think you and Sam could do it if you wanted to, but we might end up doing it from the studio just because it'll be easier, but we'll see how it works out. So we may not be at Fido's this weekend, but know that we'll be at Fido's next weekend so long as the schedule works out. Our plan is to be at Fido's every weekend for every match, home or, well, for all the away matches at Fido's Irish Pub in Buckhead for pre and post game with you guys. I mean, there's a big audience, big crowd that shows up. That first floor is usually shoulder to shoulder Atlanta United fans, so make sure you come out and partake in the festivities. But let's jump into talking about Montreal. They get Nacho Piatti back. And the kind of cool thing about this game is that you're going to have young players who played in Argentina in the Argentine Premier League going up against a guy like Nacho Piatti. Villalba is actually friends with Nacho Piatti. And from what I understand, I talked to him on Tuesday, and he said that they've actually had conversations and talked, and you know, they know each other from their time at San Lorenzo. So it from that aspect, it's going to be cool to watch them play. We also don't want to see Nacho Piatti play this Saturday. We hope that maybe his injury is taking a little longer to heal and that it lingers into tomorrow and into the weekend, and hopefully he's not in the lineup, at least maybe not starting. If he's not starting, that'd be great. I'll say this. If he doesn't start, which is sometimes what managers like to do, is instead of starting him on the first game back from injury, they'll sub him in late in the second half or midway through the second half at halftime. If that's the case, Atlanta United, just speaking generally about this game, Atlanta United have to come out early because Nacho Piatti has the ability to just change this game completely. Without Nacho Piatti, Montreal is a complete disaster. With Nacho Piatti, they are capable of scoring goals. That's not to say they're going to win the game, but they're capable of scoring, which obviously improves their chances.
And even if he does start, I mean, he's not going to be sharp right away. I mean, he'll probably play, even if he does start, you know, have to get some touches on the ball until he starts feeling good about himself. So whether he starts or not, all the more reason to strike quickly before Nacho Piatti probably inevitably has some sort of impact on that match. In terms of scoring goals, just go watch what he did against Seattle if you want to see how much of a difference he makes for that team, particularly a team that's set up on the counterattack against Seattle. He fantastic individual run for one of his goals, and then also a great through ball, I think, in behind to Mancuso, the striker, to set up the other goal. Both of them on the counterattack. When you have a player of the quality of Piatti, you give him time on the ball. You can be picking the ball out of the back of your own net just moments later, and just go watch that Seattle game for proof.
Yeah, the other thing I'd like to point out about Seattle game is that they did give up the two goals to Seattle to tie the game. They almost gave up a third to lose the game. They have not looked great, specifically in the latter stages of the game, and I wonder if that is a there's a lot of age on this team, and I wonder if that's the factor. Not having Nacho Piatti, who's 32, I believe, himself, but he's obviously the most dynamic player. He's the best player they have on that team.
Bernier is 37, 38.
Yeah, there's a lot of guys over 30 on that team, and not to say that guys over 30 can't play soccer at a high level, but you do wonder if their fitness is good for a full 90. For the entire team, you know, as a cohesive unit, can they go 90 minutes playing solid soccer? And I just don't, based off the evidence that we've seen over the first five games or so, I can't. I think that Atlanta United, the one thing they can take advantage of is a continuous press. They're not super technical on the ball, specifically in the midfield, and a lot of that age is in the midfield. So if you can turn them over in the midfield and start a counter, I think they might get they have an opportunity in this match to get more than one goal on a counter.
We've seen that before.
Exactly. We saw it last week. Both goals were essentially counterattack goals. I mean, the second one obviously was for Tito. The first one was a counter, sure, but it was more what's the best way to describe it? It was.
I'd call it a quick counter. Garza.
It was more by design, as opposed to let's just push someone into space and stuff like that. Because it Garza to Almiron. Oh, it was a Garza to Assad, then to Almiron, and Almiron plays it to Villalba.
Mm-hmm.
So there's going to be a lot of opportunities for that. You know, the back line isn't particularly strong. They're not particularly fast. Tudor Bijadba should be able to get up and down the field. Depending on who he plays alongside, you know, we'll see. We'll get a chance to see them against a not optimal back line for Montreal. We have to take advantage of those opportunities. Montreal likes to, you know, kind of bunker and work on the counter. They've wanted to move away from that, I think, a little bit this year, but that hasn't really been the case, especially with Piatti's out. Piatti is a lot of what makes the counter for them work. And when he's out, their chances are minimal. You saw the game. I went back and watched the games. I watched the extended highlights for their games without Piatti, and it just looks like they're just not the same team, and it's clear. It's almost like us without Jose Martinez is we're not the same team, but we have guys that can fill in, you know, we have guys like Bijadba, who's proven he can make runs in behind the back line and get into space and rip shots if he has a chance. If he has a little bit of open space, he's going to take those opportunities, and hopefully we see more of that. Hopefully, what I'd like to see, and we'll get into this later, is obviously I'd like to see Kenwin alongside Bijadba. I don't know. I don't necessarily think it's going to happen. I think you'll end up having something like Jacob Peterson and maybe, I don't know. It's hard to say.
Probably have to go Almiron on the other wing. It probably has to be Almiron.
But then you're talking about playing a 4-4-2 with Admiron more at the top of the diamond and him just kind of listed out there. Because I don't think even against Toronto, he was listed out as a left winger, but he played very centrally. He was not a left winger, I expected once that lineup came out. And I expect much of the same today. I don't think that even if Kenwin does start, you're still looking at more of a 4-4-2 kind of setup. But I don't think it's going to happen. I think they're ultimately going to try to keep things the same, put Peterson out wide since he's good to go. And I don't know who they fill in that left wing role. They obviously watch these guys at practice. You know, Tata Martino obviously watches these guys at practice a lot better than I do. So, you know, he'll make a decision, whatever decision he sees to be best. And we'll see if that's working or if it doesn't work. And if it doesn't work, how quickly does Tata Martino get away from whatever he starts the match with?
It'll be interesting to see. His hands might be tied, though. It might be just a straight swap Peterson for Assad, and then the rest of the midfield stays the same from last match. One thing I'm going to be interested to watch is you spoke about Almiron having the free roll to roam inside. It was a little different last week when you're playing against a 3-5-2 where the wingers are more box-to-box. With Montreal, they're going to try to counterattack and at times keep their wingers high. So if you've got Almiron drifting out of position or your fullback's bombing forward and you've got a speedy winger like Dominic Oduro on one side or obviously Piatti, as we discussed, on the other, that could create a real problem if those guys start to get isolated on the fullback's 1v1 because Almiron is starting to roam. So it's going to be – depending on which wing Almiron is on, whether it's Oduro with his pace or Piatti with his playmaking ability, he's going to have to take more of a defensive responsibility, I think, than he did against Toronto, because the winger is going to be higher up the pitch and more quickly because they're going to look to counter. So it's going to be a different type of defensive responsibility for both wide players. But with the way that Almiron plays, he's going to have to be extra cognizant of being a little more disciplined and getting back wide and defending when needed.
Do you have thoughts on the lineup, on the potential lineup, or what you think the lineup should be? 713-955-0722. Get in on the Mountain South Podcast live, brought to you by Dirty South Soccer and CrossFit Vesuvio. One of the things I am looking forward to is to see – I thought the Atlanta United back line did a great job of, you know, containing Giovinco. He didn't get – he got the one great shot off. Off of the give and go that was ultimately just bad defense on a number of players for Atlanta United, but he didn't get real good looks. There was never, outside of the one big save Can had, there wasn't a lot that Giovinco did that really was a big threat in terms of actually shooting on goal. He only had, I think, only had two shots on target. One of which was saved by Can. The other one was the other one was a goal. But I thought overall they did a great job, not only of staying in that game, getting back into the game, and then maintaining that 2-2 draw a 2-2 score line until the 90th minute, which we saw a different scenario against the Red Bulls earlier in the season. So good on them. Good on them for essentially containing guys like Jordan Morris and Clint Dempsey, even though they did have their moments and they did have their opportunities to score. Ultimately, it was a 0-0 tie. So I'm looking forward to see how, in the third week in a row, they go up against a big playmaker, a dynamic player that can make things happen on the wing, centrally, in the midfield, wherever he is a playmaker. He's the one that's going to be doing things. And so I think Greg Garza is going to have his work cut out for him. I think Michael Parkhurst is going to have to do a lot of help. I think that's ultimately going to mean Perez is going to be, you know, backing up a lot of guys in this game. He's going to be bailing a lot of guys out with some good tackles. And this might be a game where we see a lot of toughness out of the back line. I wouldn't be surprised if a couple yellow cards just to set the tone early.
Mm-hmm. Well, you mentioned the back line. I think it's really interesting when they have been under the most pressure and when they've struggled the most is when the possession game has not been clicking for Atlanta United. And I think it's important. You mentioned the Toronto match. All of those chances in the first half, most of them were self-inflicted from the inability to complete passes out of the back. So really the key in terms of defensively keeping a Piatti off the ball, it's not so much man-marking him or double-teaming him out wide. It's more about holding on to the ball and forcing him to get deeper and defend. And that's going to be the key for Atlanta United in this match. When you're facing a team that we expect to set up deep and try to hit you on the counter, you're going to have to be solid in possession, find those small spaces in the final third and get in behind and score. I think it'll be similar to what we saw against Chicago with 11v11 and at 11v10 in terms of the way the game is going to go. So we talk a lot about, I think, the defense and the 1v1 matchups they have to face with the opponent's players. But I've always felt the key for Atlanta United and in Tata Martino's teams in general has always been your best defense is your offense, which is you can't score if we have the ball, and you can't score if we have the ball deep in your half and we're forcing you to come back and defend. So that's what I think to watch for in this game is where are Piatti and Oduro on the field? Are they way back defending and we're seeing Garza and Mears pushing forward and getting into the attack? Or is Atlanta United struggling in possession and those guys are able to get high up the pitch and be threatening on the counter? So it's going to be really interesting to see how that all works out.
It's interesting you mentioned that specifically, that the possessing the ball, because they didn't do a great job of it against Seattle or Toronto. And Montreal is not Seattle or Toronto, so they should have a lion's share of the possession. We play Toronto later in the season, and it's going to be a good measuring stick to see how far they've come as a team going up against a team they struggled with last week.
I think it's the last game of the season.
I think so too. I can't see – it's on my phone, and I can't see the full schedule. I just saw that
I'm pretty sure it is.
We do play Toronto toward the end, so I just wanted to point that out. But yeah, I think this is an opportunity to get back to that, possessing good passes. I thought that was the big thing with Atlanta against Seattle and Toronto, that the passes weren't there. And it was the pressure that Toronto and Seattle were putting on Atlanta United in that back line and in the defensive third that really created problems. Montreal isn't that team. Montreal,
right, exactly.
they might pick and choose the places they want to press, but they're not going to be pressing the entire team the entire game. They just don't have the legs for it. Again, there's a lot of age on this team. There's a lot of age in the midfield, and they won't be able to handle. I don't think they'll be able to handle what Atlanta United is gonna bring, especially with just what we've seen so far. I mean, Gressel has been dynamite. For the most part, Almiron is Almiron. He's as much a workhorse defensively as he is on the attack. Bijalba, even as a central forward, is going to be a pest on that back line whenever they have the ball. And I wouldn't be surprised if there are goals, honestly, on both ends. Atlanta United can't get the possession in the back in the defensive third under control. If they can't put together good passes into the midfield, then we're looking at a game where there's going to be a lot of counterattack opportunities and a lot of probably counterattack goals. If Atlanta United can play the way they played against Chicago, and it's going to be 11-on-11, assuming nothing crazy happens, but that the way they handled Chicago, even though it was even though they were man down, is more like the game I think we're going to get on Saturday. I think Montreal is going to have to depend on Nacho and Oduro and the name escapes me, the guy up top.
It's Mancosu up top, and then Patrice Bernier as the number 10 is also a guy that can pull the strings on the counter.
But if they can control that, if they can control the ball, if they can possess the ball, this game is going to be theirs. Before the last 2 weeks, I would have told you Montreal has enough talent to surprise you. Having watched them closely the last 2 weeks, if Atlanta United doesn't come out with a win, that's a disappointment. Even though it's on the road, even though it's a hostile environment, even though it's international travel and all that good stuff, they're a team that Atlanta should beat. And that's not necessarily to say that they will beat them, but I don't think a draw would be a fair result on Atlanta's side, assuming things go the way they go.
Agreed. And Montreal have really struggled this season. And you could argue that they have the three draws. You could argue that 3 points even flatters them a bit. Certainly a couple of weeks ago, they were really fortunate to get out. They were in Chicago and they got a 2-2 draw in a game that they were basically dominated and scored on the counter attack a couple of times.
Chicago played them like we played Chicago.
Yeah, absolutely. No,
I mean, if you
go
watch the extended highlights. You'll see how much of the possession Chicago Fire had, and it was amazing. I mean, they did have Bastian Schweinsteiger, who scored the first goal and all that good stuff. But at the same time, it did not look good for Montreal.
And Montreal, so they are, I believe they are second lowest in the league in expected goals statistic. And also they're facing the most shots per game so far this season. So, I mean, we can sit here and talk. The numbers support our point. They have really, really struggled this season. And we have seen Piatti in the lineup, and we've seen Piatti out of the lineup. So with or without him, I agree with you, Eric. This is a game where I think Atlanta United expects to dominate the match, control the tempo, and come out with the 3 points.
Jay Riddle writes into the Mazda podcast, if Kenwin doesn't start in Montreal with Assad out and Peterson just coming back from injury, will he ever start this season? If he doesn't start this week, I don't think he starts the season. Unless it's a dire situation or it's open cup play, I don't think he gets an MLS start unless something crazy happens, if he doesn't get the start this weekend. I think we know exactly where he is in Tata Martino's mind if he doesn't get the start this weekend. I don't think there's any excuse for him not being fit, unless he's just not trying hard at practice, which I seriously doubt, considering just the makeup of this team, the type of players we have, the world-class coach, just everything. I can't imagine a player – I feel like we would hear about a player not practicing hard or whatever, or slacking it. Whatever. Regardless, if he's not starting this weekend, I think we know exactly where he fits within his team, the role he's going to play, and that'll be in the last 15, 20 minutes or so, whatever it may be, you know, trying to either hold the lead, maintain the draw, or try to score late if we're down a goal or two.
I think if he doesn't start him this weekend, it at least signifies that we're not going to see him in the first 11 for a while, unless Tata's hand is really forced. One thing that I think is unique to this situation, even though we know Kenwin Jones is a very talented player that's played at very high levels, is that, and you heard Kevin Egan allude to this in the interview with Sam, Tata Martino is a manager that wants his team to play one way all the time. And Kenwin Jones doesn't really fit into that system. So right. When he's trying to kind of drill this system into these guys at this point of the season, I think maybe at this point you leave Kenwin out and go with a Tito Villalba, who's a better fit, and that way you can get this system ingrained in these players' minds, and then maybe later in the season, if the tactics call for it, you switch the game and go to Kenwin Jones. But I think at the very least, if we don't see him in the first 11 Saturday, it's going to be a long time before we see him in that first 11, unless he just has no other choice.
And I have full faith in Tata Martino at this point to just go with whatever decision he makes. I didn't understand why Gressel was starting over McCann. I do now. I didn't understand why Kenwin is not in the past couple games. I don't fully understand, because again, I'm not saying it's the wrong decision. I'm just saying I don't understand. I want to know. Not that I understand. I want more information as to why he's not starting. I just want the answer. I want to be in the meeting room where they're discussing who starts and who doesn't and what the starting 11 looks like, to have a full understanding. Obviously, I'm never going to get that. But it's not that I think they're the wrong decisions. It's I have confidence in what Tata Martino's doing and how he set up this team and how everything has gone so far. I don't want to switch anything that's broken. I would, on paper, a guy like Villalba and a player like Kenwyn Jones up top seems like it'd be a great fit. But there could be they could have tried this at practice. They could have tried this in training for the last 3 weeks, and it just hasn't worked. And if that's the case, I fully understand. I fully accept why. The problem is we don't know. But I don't – again, I have enough faith and trust in Tata Martino and what he's done in the entire Atlanta United front office to accept whatever the starting 11 is, whatever they decide to do moving forward, even if it doesn't give us a favorable result. I trust that you know, he's putting the players in the position to succeed from the beginning.
Absolutely. And, you know, that doesn't mean that he doesn't see value in Kenwyn. I think that a player like Kenwyn Jones has immense value on a Tata Martino-style side coming off the bench because we saw it in the limited time that he played in Seattle and in Toronto, the impact that he can have switching up to a more direct style, coming back, defending on set pieces. Montreal, terrible at defending set pieces. So we might see him coming off the bench this weekend towards the end. So I think he still has a lot of value. So I don't think people should see this as Kenwyn Jones not being a good player or not having a part to play in the season. I think it's more a matter of him just not being a great fit for Tata Martino's system in terms of what Tata wants to do over 90 minutes. But obviously that can change within a match. And if you have a guy coming off the bench that's the kind of the antithesis of Martino's system, that's very difficult for a back four that's been preparing for an Atlanta United team that's going to kind of play that possession style. And suddenly you've got a big physical presence of play direct, play it to his chest, let him hold the ball up. So he's a very valuable asset, I think, regardless, and one that we might see really, really pay dividends way down the line in a match where we need a grinded out goal late in the match or defending set pieces, things like that. So he has a role to play this season, no doubt, whether he's starting or not.
A couple of minutes left before we wrap it up. If you want to get your call in, 713-955-0722. Thoughts on the lineup, thoughts on what your expectations are against Montreal. One of the things I wanted to bring up, and I'm glad you brought it up, the set pieces. Montreal is typically hasn't been great on set pieces. And thinking back to how Atlanta United has allowed their goals, none of them have been on set pieces. Outside of the one against New York, none of the other ones have been on set pieces. I mean, I don't really count the BK. I know it's a set piece goal, but I mean that's a different category in itself. When I mean set piece, I mean off a corner, off of a free kick, whatever the case may be. It's only been that one against New York, right? Or am I wrong? I don't recall another goal.
There has been a lot of chances, but that is the only goal. And the set piece defending was much, much better against Toronto.
And it obviously improves the guy like Kenwyn Jones is in there, which, you know, he may or may not be in there depending on what Tata Martino thinks is the best lineup for against Montreal. But I'm actually surprised. We walked out of New York thinking, all right, well, that was one of the things we thought was going to be a problem, set piece goals, and that hasn't really been a problem since then. And I don't know if things have changed since that goal went in, or if, you know, Atlanta United has been better defending overall. But it's definitely a good sign. It's definitely, hopefully we're not seeing that happen this weekend, because that would be devastating. But it's good. It's good that we haven't given up set piece goals and that we can depend on, at least yet, that we can depend on this back line to do everything. And I mean, as high as the wingers as high as the fullbacks push up, you're basically playing a two-man back line at times. So that's where my concern comes in, is how high does Greg Garza, does Mears play? Because you know, Montreal is going to be looking for that counter. If they can get it, they're going to spring on you quick. And I wouldn't be surprised if we see at least one or two 3v2s on Montreal's side going to goal. One or two maybe lead to goals. I would rather Garza and Mears kind of stay home for the most part, knowing that that's a real possibility, that that's how they're going to attack. That's how they want to score their goal. That's how they're going to be forced to score their goals, in my opinion. And hopefully that's just not the case.
And I think with those fullbacks, really, really in terms of their positioning, the key is what's going on around them. So as I mentioned earlier, if we're holding the ball, knocking around, moving it side to side, they can move up slowly as the entire team's shape pushes forward towards the Montreal goal. But what we don't want to see is those two guys sprinting, bombing forward, trying to get into the attack in a direct way. Almost that's what Montreal is going to try to do. So you don't want to see your right and left back bombing forward when it's not necessary in the Atlanta system, which is to play a little slower and hope possess the ball. Because if you do that, you're leaving, as you mentioned, potentially three players, maybe two, in a difficult scenario for the center backs. So I think the key is, and we'll have to watch, but in the wide areas, if Atlanta possesses the ball, Garza and Mears can attack a lot more comfortably. For instance, against Chicago, we keep comparing this to Chicago because it's similar. You saw those guys get on the ball a lot in the attacking half, but you didn't see them bombing forward, running down, trying to beat their man 1v1. It was more of a natural progression moving forward with the rest of the team.
Right.
Whereas against Toronto, playing that three-man back line, so there's a little bit of space out wide, you saw those guys bombing forward a bit more, trying to get into higher positions. But what we'll see, what we should see Saturday is, yes, they'll stay at home, but they're going to just move with the shape naturally. And if that shape plays well, if we're able to hold the ball in the center and control the game there, then the wide players can all get forward and have an impact as well.
The wingers for Toronto definitely did a great job of containing Garza and Mears and their ability to get up and down the flanks.
Yeah, yeah, they were great, man. They were really good because we thought coming into that.
I thought that was the difference than I thought it would be. That was the difference, I think, ultimately. I think that not being able to get down the wings was big because you obviously had Villalba up top. You had Assad more or less on the wing, kind of, but not really. You didn't have that wing presence that you normally have when Joseph Martinez and Tito and Assad are out wide. It was absent for the most part against Toronto. And I think that's where hopefully Atlanta is different going into this game, is that they've worked
Absolutely.
Out a way to get Garza and get Mears up the flanks.
And it's no coincidence that you lose that battle on the flanks in Toronto when you're not able to control the game through the middle. And that's pretty much, I think, you can bet on that with Atlanta. You're not controlling the game and the possession of a ball through the center. You're really going to have a difficult time with those wide players in a defensive manner.
Well, that about wrap it up for us. So if you have any final thoughts, any thoughts on the podcast itself, make sure to email us at motspodcast@gmail.com. You can email me at – sorry, you can tweet me at Eric G. Quintana on Twitter. Josh, tell them how to find you.
JoshB914. Real quickly, shout out to Chris Duvall. Should be starting for Montreal. The fullback position, local boy from Duluth. Have been lucky enough to play against his older brother. Great player, and we love to see the ATL boys doing it big.
Yeah, hopefully we get to see him. Hopefully he has some. I wonder if he has some things to say about Atlanta in terms of his hometown creating a club, and him now playing against that club.
Yeah, I'm sure it'll be a memorable weekend for him.
I wonder if at some point he ends up in an Atlanta United uniform sometime down the road. But that's it for us. Well, actually, you know what? Score predictions. Thoughts on how this game ends up.
Oh, man. I think I've predicted us to win every single match. I'm going to just keep that going. I really think this is a game Atlanta United controls. I'm going to go 3-1, Montreal gets one against the run of play on the counterattack. I'd like to see, one more for Villalba and Almiron getting one more. And I'm going to say it again. Gressel gets on the score sheet this week. I'm just going to keep predicting that until I look smart.
I was going to go with the 3-1, but I don't want to copy you. I think that just based on the way the back line is played, you know, especially against guys like Jordan Morris, Dempsey. I know they're not Nacho Piatti, but Giovinco is, and I really think they did a great job of containing him. So considering they're not the same players, but they're very similar, and they play more or less the same position. So I'm going to say 3-0, just because I think this back line does a great job. I think that across the board, they're great. I think Can has proven himself more than worthy. I think that we'll get enough chances. 3-0 is what I'm going with. So hopefully that comes to fruition.
Yeah, I think we pretty much
Saturday.
Agree. Yeah, it's a 3-0-3-1 game, not a 2-1-3-1 game. It's going to be more of a 3-0. Yeah, and comfortable.
Yeah, either way, I think Atlanta United is kind of closing out the last few minutes by just controlling the ball and waiting out the clock.
Mm-hmm. Agreed.
I don't think they'll be in a position where they're trying to fight for the last goal. But it is MLS. Things do happen. Crazy things do happen. And hopefully we don't fall victim to any weirdness again. I mean, we've already had the weird red card. We had what other weird moments did we have? Mike Geiger, Mark Geiger in the first game. We had the snow game. We had was that it? Is that a little weird stuff?
I mean, I think the Chicago game was 70 minutes
weird.
Against 10 men. I mean, yeah. Agreed.
We just want to beat a team outright. We haven't beat a team since we played Chicago, right? Yeah, that was the last one we had.
Yeah.
Seattle. I mean, obviously Seattle and Toronto were tough games, and there were good draws leaving Seattle and Toronto. But Montreal is a capable team. I'm not saying they're a great team, but they're a capable team. They're a capable MLS team. They did go to the Eastern Conference Finals last year and faced Toronto, losing to Toronto in the Eastern Conference Finals. So this is a solid team, even though they do have their faults. It's a solid team, and I just want to see Atlanta United go out with no weirdness and just beat the living dog you know what out of this team. I that's what I would love to see, even without Joseph Martinez.
Agreed, and I think it's set up nicely for that to happen. But time will tell. We are a tad biased, but time will tell.
Time will tell. Hopefully we're talking about a win on Monday next week. That does it for us. So make sure, again, you're following us on Facebook, on Twitter, at MOTS Podcast. Thanks again to CrossFit Vesuvio, sponsor of the show. Check them out if you're looking for a CrossFit gym to join, $135. And until next time, see you later, guys.